Welcome to the Power of the Purse podcast, the only show connecting baby boomer women with professional peers. Advice you can use to be more confident in your financial future. Inspiration to take control of your personal finances. With Lynn S. Evans, Certified Financial Planner.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lynn S. Evans, and I am the host of Power of the Purse podcast. There was a time in my life not too long ago when I believed three things about money. One, women are not supposed to talk about money or be included in any conversations about money. Two, women don't have the natural ability to understand anything about money. And three, men know best how to manage money. And those truths I made up about money guided me for years until I realized money was not a foreign language or some other obscure academic exercise. And it was something I could not only understand, but teach to other women. Too many times I've heard stories from women who ought to know better but didn't, until they were forced to because of divorce, widowhood, job loss, or the approach of retirement. This podcast will add another chapter to an ongoing, informative conversation about financial topics women should be more knowledgeable about. My mission is to help women reduce their financial illiteracy and develop a healthy relationship with money. With that in mind, my guest today is Nicole Jansen. Over the past 30 years, Nicole has helped thousands of people transform their lives and achieve extraordinary results in business. She's a human behavior specialist, business breakthrough coach, host of the Leaders of Transformation podcast, and co-author of the book, Power Up Superwomen. Nicole has developed her own unique brand of mentorship, which focuses on tapping into your authentic self and integrating business and life mastery for holistic success. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you, Lynn. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I got so much I want to talk with you about that I don't even know where to start. But let's start with the business that you have. And I just tell me and tell my listeners a little bit about what you do and why you do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So my business is Discover the Edge is the name of the company. And I am really passionate about helping business owners and entrepreneurs, leaders to be able to play to their strengths, to maximize their potential in business, in their life, ultimately. I mean, one of the greatest things and the greatest rewards that I get from working with my clients is when they come back to me and say, Nicole, I love my life. Because when they say that, I know that not only are they making money, but they're having fun, their relationships are great, their health is great. So it's a really holistic approach to it. But when we're talking about business and being financially, you know, profitable, being financially literate, it is about strategy and it's about building the skills and really playing to your strengths where you're in your sweet spot doing what you love, what you're great at, and what you can make money at.
And you know, I think most people would love that life, but I don't think they understand how to get their arms around what that is. What is it that makes me happy, that I love, and I'm having fun? So how do we get there?
Great, great question. You know, this is a question I asked myself years ago. I started out, I was an entrepreneur from a very early age. My parents were entrepreneurs and business owners. My dad owned garages, franchises. And there came a point in time in my life when I was in my late 20s where everything fell apart. And I thought, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And what am I passionate about? What do I love doing? And what is me? And what is what everybody else thinks I should be doing? What's the difference? And so I asked myself a series of questions, and that was back 20 years ago now. Now there's a lot more talk about purpose and, you know, focusing on your purpose. Back then, there really wasn't a tool that I knew of that I could ask these questions. So I started asking myself questions like, you know, what do I love doing? What really inspires me? Where are the moments in my life when I have been the most inspired, the most effective? What are the things that people ask me for advice on. And what I discovered in that was that, and I use the example of an analogy of a game. You know, if I'm going to play a game, what game am I playing? And what is my role in that game? So I loved seeing people, you know, and that's what I discovered. I love seeing people win. I love seeing people excel. And I was like, okay, well, that's kind of broad. So how can we narrow that down? Right. And that's where I discovered, like, you know what I really love is I love when people are shining bright. They're playing to their strengths. This is where that idea of, wow, when they're in their zone doing what they love, not just making a lot of money, because I've met a lot of people, and I'm sure you have too, where you yes. meet a lot of people that, you know, they've made a lot of money, but they're not fulfilled, right? So it's more than how much is in their bank account. And when they have that light, that joy in what they're doing. And so I went through a series of questions and asking myself, and you mentioned about the article that I wrote on LinkedIn a couple of years back. Mm-hmm. They allude to a few questions there. You know, it's like, what do you enjoy doing? What could you do that you would do it even if you didn't get paid for it? You just love it so much you do it anyway. Not to say that you shouldn't get paid for it.
Yeah.
But that you would do it because you love it that much. What do you naturally do? I noticed when I was a kid, I was an organizer. Like, I would organize my room and literally reorganize the furniture and everything in my room about every 3 to 4 weeks. And here I am, 6, 7 years old, moving furniture around. And then I got to the point where I looked around and I went, no, the way I just had it before was actually better than this. And I moved it back and I didn't change it again until we moved to the next house. And then I did this all over again. And what I realized later that was the maximizer gift for those people that are listening that are familiar with StrengthsFinder. You know, yes. They come up with the 5 themes of talent. One of mine is maximizer. And so that maximizer gift is figuring out what is the optimal, in the case of my room, what is the optimal setting. And then once I got to it, well, I didn't need to change it again. And that same gift was the same gift that helped me when I was helping my parents in their business and I was launching my business to develop systems, to be very efficient, to deal with massive amounts of information that, you know, I could do that efficiently. And I've seen that play out in my life. And I think sometimes the biggest thing is we don't realize what we're good at because we don't really pay attention and we take it for granted and say, well, doesn't everybody do this? And let me tell you, they don't. Not everybody's organized.
I agree.
Right? So,
yes.
You know, so it's yes. Going, yeah. And it's going back and figuring out and saying, what is that thing that I do so naturally that I actually take for granted? Now, oftentimes having an outside perspective on that helps. And that's why I do sessions with people and walk them through this process, because sometimes seeing it for yourself, you take it for granted. You don't even value it because it's not something that you had to work hard to develop. Now, having said that, once you identify it, then you can leverage it and then you can develop the skills and the knowledge and experience around that strength. But it starts with asking yourself and really digging deep into what drives you, what you love doing, what you enjoy, what you're great at. Asking people around you, you know, the people that know you best, and saying, what do you know me for? You know, what do I do best? And see, you know, what comes back. And then you'll start to see common threads.
Nicole, how about when you're in a situation, when you're asking those questions to people around you and you think that you're really good at some particular thing, you see it as a strength and others do not, or maybe they think that it's a weakness. And I'm thinking of this because I did the Strength Finders program probably 12, 15 years ago. I don't even remember what the results were, but I remember thinking, what if what I think my strengths are really aren't? So when I'm answering the questions, I'm really good at blah, 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 blah. Maybe I'm not. And so how do you know that what you think your strengths are really your strengths? You said you talk to people and help them with this. Is there some other way you can get around that?
Yeah, you know, it's a good point because it's kind of like I've talked to business owners and say, you know, how are you as a leader? Oh, I'm fantastic. Oh, yeah, really? Exactly. Let me go talk to your team.
I'll exactly.
Find out exactly what's going down. But anyway, to your point, yeah, you know, when you do an assessment, you got to, there's a level of self-awareness and honesty with yourself, you know, that is necessary to get the right, I didn't say the right answers, but the correct truth, you know, truthful answers from an assessment. Now, when you ask other people, you ask enough people that know you well and that you trust. You don't just ask anybody on the street. You don't just ask anybody casually. Mm-hmm. These are people that believe in you, that trust you, that want to see the best in you, that they're willing to give you the honest truth. Because when you ask for feedback, if you're a person that doesn't like feedback and you've resisted it in the past, and then you say to people, you know, what do you think of me? They're going to be like, oh, I'm not going there.
Exactly. You know. Like employees.
They've got too much at risk. Yeah. I had a friend one time text me and say, you know, I'm working with this coach and I would like to know what are my biggest weaknesses. And I'm thinking, wow. Oh yeah. I remember the last time. Not going there. Right.
Yeah. So scary.
Do you really want to know the answer to that? No, but seriously, you know, when it comes down to really knowing, I think that's where having somebody, that's why hiring a coach, having somebody that doesn't have an agenda, that just wants to see the best for you. And, you know, you'll hear, like, if you think, you know, I have a strength in this area. Okay. So how is that playing out? Because if you're not seeing results in that area, then maybe that's not a strength, right? Yeah. Or sometimes what happens is our strengths become weaknesses because we take them to an extreme. Somebody might say, you know what? I'm really good. I'm a really good talker. And other people are like, yeah, you don't shut up. Right. So that's taking the gift of the gab, or in the strengths finder, maybe the woo, right?
Yeah.
Or in the DISC, because I'm certified in DISC, you know, taking that I personality type and it going to the extreme where, you know, you don't shut up. You know, you're talking all the time, you're talking over people, and they're not getting a chance to share. And so that's where, you know, in the midst of that, though, there is a strength. It just needs to be developed and reined in. So that's important to recognize as well. And I do find that a lot of times, like, the strengths that people have, analysis is another one. People are very, you know, certain people are very analytical. You talk about in the finance, you know, there are a lot of financial planners, advisors. I mean, they're very analytical, which is great. Now, if you take that to the extreme, there can be paralysis. There can be overanalyzing. There can be looping and never getting anything accomplished. Again, another strength taken to an extreme that's become a weakness. So coming back to, you know, the question is, look at, you know, what you think are your strengths, and then look for validation of that strength. So my maximizer strength, you know, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I've been hired to go in and increase efficiencies. You know, I've worked with lawyers on programs where, you know, I was doing in 3 days a week what it, you know, it took two people full time to do, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I saw the if you plant a seed, right, you get a harvest. Yeah. What's the harvest? What's the result? And if there's no result, maybe you want to start questioning whether or not you are seeing the truth about what your strength, or maybe there's something close to it, or maybe you're just not confident. Maybe you're not utilizing that strength in the way, or you're not seeing the results because you're not confident in your own ability. So you're second guessing yourself. That happens a lot as well, right? You second guess yourself. You doubt yourself. You mentioned in your introduction, women who, you know, if they believe that they're not supposed to be the one dealing with the money, they're not supposed to know anything about it, they might actually be really good with numbers, but if they don't believe, and they have this conditioning that they're not supposed to value those things or find those things important or focus on those things, then they might not.
And I agree. I think that is a big piece of it. I was just going to go, that's a perfect segue into one other of those five questions that you asked in the article that you did for LinkedIn 2 years ago. The fifth one was, what have you dreamed of doing or being that immediately caused the negative voice inside your head to say, don't be silly, you'll never be able to make enough money doing that, or you'll never be able to understand money, or whatever it is. That is so much a part of our societal conditioning that it scares me. I think of it from the context of how many people I've dealt with who are near retirement, who have done the right thing, let's just put that in quotes, all their lives. They have worked in a corporate environment, let's say, or they've been business owners, and they've held their nose to the grindstone for all the years that they were doing this because they had what they felt were family obligations. Then it became that I have a role in the community that I must fulfill. I'm the successful entrepreneur. I'm supposed to be serving on boards of directors of various organizations. They do all the stuff that they're expected to do, and then they hit retirement. And then they don't know what to do with themselves because they never followed a path like you're talking about where they're doing something they love. And so the idea of retiring into nothing is so scary because it wasn't something that they loved to do in the first place, or they conditioned themselves to believe that this was something that they really liked and were good at. It may not have been something that spoke to them, to their soul or anything else, but they just did it. So that's the one that as soon as I read it, I went, wow, that is such an important question. Because so many people, I think of my father, who was someone who never wanted to be in the son of a business owner who had they sold heating oil. And it was just assumed that my father would follow in my grandfather's footsteps. And he hated every day of what he was doing, hated it. He always said to me what he'd love to do is own a bookstore. And of course, that wasn't going to float because you can't start a business when you have three new mouths to feed and a wife and a mortgage. So he was one of my greatest supporters, always trying to push me to do something that I loved and to be in business for myself and all the other stuff that goes with it. So he kind of lived vicariously through me and my successes and failures and all that stuff that I know I went through. But I just wonder how many people in our society have done exactly what I just said because that's what they thought was the right thing to do. And it's not really what speaks to them. And somewhere along the line, that negative voice inside their head said, don't be silly. You'll never be able to make enough money doing that. So yeah. How do we get past that?
Yeah, to your point, I think there's a lot of people in that situation. I think that there is an identity crisis going on right now where on so many levels, but so people they've been living a lie. They've been living somebody else's expectations versus living. And you know, it's so funny. We hear it all the time, right? People say, you know, I'm discovering who I am.
Yeah.
Rediscovering. Kids don't, you know, yes. They know.
Exactly.
They come out, they're clear. But that is conditioned out of us knowing that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, how do you do that? Well, I think it comes back to knowing who you are and why you're here. And realizing that, you know what, you only have, I know there's going to be some people who are listening who are saying, well, you have many lives and I've lived many past lives. Okay, whatever. I just know about the one that I'm in right now.
And you're sure of that one. That's about all.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I don't know what's going to happen in the future or what happened in the past, but here's what I do know is that we have a certain amount of years on this planet. My mother one time, she's a great lady. Both my parents have passed away now. And that in itself will give you a wake-up call because they both died in their early 70s suddenly. Mm-hmm. And so there wasn't any warning. And it was just like one day they were great. The next day they were gone. And it was like, what just happened? And so you realize how fleeting life is. But I remember my mom one time, and she said, you know, she was frustrated. And she said, yeah, but so-and-so is not doing this, and so-and-so is not doing that. And, you know, and so all this, you know, talking about what everybody else wasn't doing. And I said to her, I said, you know, I said, and this, I don't know, this may not believe this, whatever, but this was just my, what I said to her is I said, look, at the end of your day, you know, she's a Christian and so am I. And she, I said, at the end of the day, you're going to stand before God and he's going to ask you the, I said, I just have this visualization in my head that God is, you know, you're going to stand before him and he's going to say, what did you do with the gifts that I gave you? What are you going to say? Well, he didn't, and she didn't, and this happened, and that happened. And he's, I just have this picture in my mind that is like, he's going to say, I didn't ask you about them. I'm asking about you. And so it comes back to knowing who you are and how you're designed and being true. This is where being true to yourself, you know, comes in, where it's like, I, you know, deep down inside when you were a kid, what did you love doing? You know, you were made perfect, right? And you're like this masterpiece, you know, that's unfolding. And, you know, you owe it to yourself. And maybe it's just even shifting that and saying, you know what, hey, not only could I make money at it, but you know what, I owe it to myself. I owe it to, if you believe in God, I owe it to God. I, you know, my creator, I owe it to the people around me to bring that gift that I was given, that nobody has the same exact combination of strengths, passion, and experience. And I owe it to bring that to the world. And so sometimes that is because sometimes we won't do things for ourselves, but we'll do things for other people.
Oh, if that makes sense.
And so whether, and then I love what you said about your dad, because, you know, he encouraged you and, you know, because of his lessons, he didn't want you to follow that same path. And, you know, think about the kid, you know, your kids and, you know, okay, if you don't live your life and you aren't true to yourself and what you really love to do, what are your kids going to do? They're going to follow in your footsteps. They're going to do the same thing,
yes.
You know? And so some of these things is like leverage, you know, Tony Robbins, I've done a lot of work with learning how Tony works and does the interventions, and it's brilliant. And, but he talks about this leverage, right? You got to have leverage and know what, for each person, it's different. What will move them beyond the fear of, you know, and the little voice that is afraid of stepping out and being shot down or failing. You know, the worst thing in life is not failing. It's failing to try.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. There's also another practical piece of this, because I, you know, being the business coach, I also look at it and saying, you know what, there's a lot of people out there nowadays that are like, I want to do this and I'm just going to be flowing in my purpose and my, you know, they haven't figured out how to monetize that. There is a reality to it. Yeah. You got to be able to make money at it in order to sustain you. As I share with my clients and saying, look, you know what, they don't take good intentions at the grocery store. They take cash. And so, you know,
that's a great line.
It's important though, right?
Yes.
Like, so it's about marrying. That's why when I talk about strengths, passion, and experience, and marrying that with a need in the marketplace, you've got to figure out, you've got to connect that to a need or a desire in the marketplace and a gap in the marketplace, an opportunity in the marketplace. You've got to marry that so it can be sustainable. And that's where working with someone, if somebody's never been in business before, or they say you could never make money at that. I had a friend of mine who was a singer and an entertainer and all these things. And she was frustrated because, and great, really great trainer. And here she was, she wanted to make money as a singer, but she also knew that, you know, there's a lot of people out there with tremendous talent. So I'm not sure that I'll ever be able to make money at that. And I said to her, I said, well, you know, if you think in the box of, well, I have to make money as a musician by selling CDs at that time, mm-hmm. you know, then you're putting yourself in this small framework, or I need to get gigs, then you're not opening yourself up to other possibilities. I said, you're a tremendous trainer as well and communicator and speaker. What if you were to marry those two together, speak and train and play your music at the same time? What if you would MC events, right? What if you became, and she was really great at coaching, you know, others in vocal coaching. So you can make money at vocal, coaching. There are things you can do in and around that industry, right? So you can be in the place doing the things that you love doing and hanging out with the people that you love hanging out with. And just, it's like widen your possibilities of how you can make money doing the thing that you love. And, you know, I don't know about you. I've heard a lot of speakers, thousands of speakers, live speakers, over the years. Very few know how to sing, and or even if they do they incorporate that into their, into their presentation? I knew a young guy who was who learned how to rap, and he wanted to speak to teens. And I said, oh my goodness, put those two things together. You'll get the attention of these kids, right? You'll raise the value of, why would I hire somebody else versus you? It's like, well, because this one's going to entertain and all these other aspects. So it's looking outside the box to say, how could I make money, rather than making a statement of I couldn't make money at that. Say, if I were to make money at that, what would it need to look like? And you might need some help out, support outside that to even just expand your vision of what's possible.
I have to tell you that as you're speaking, I'm remembering 2 weeks ago, week and a half ago, I was in Philadelphia and I was attending an event, and there was a keynote speaker as well as a closing remarks kind of person. And this one woman got up who wanted to talk about caregiving, which was the essence of the program. And she actually started by bringing a laptop, not even a laptop, it was an iPad, hit a button and had some karaoke kind of music in the background. And all of a sudden she started to sing. And I just thought, this is fabulous. This is not something that anybody would ever think to do. And usually it's the, maybe I start with a joke or whatever it is. But this woman sang a song, did a second song, then began to speak about what she wanted to speak about, and then closed with another song. And I just thought, how gutsy is that, to hope that your voice is there when you're in front of a group of people, you have nobody else around you, but boy, did she do a great job. And I remembered it. It was really incredible.
I was just going to say, it's memorable. Yes. That's the thing, is how do you be memorable? Right.
That's awesome.
And when you're doing the thing that you're great at, and you're talking, that genius zone, or what I call the edge. Yeah. When you're in that zone, you are memorable.
Yeah.
And I think it's funny because, I had a lady, a young woman years ago, she was a financial advisor and she was struggling. And this was when I was back in Canada, and I was working with a company. They had 3,500 advisors and she was one of these advisors. Now there's a lot more advisors than that, but this was just this one company at 3,500 advisors. And she said, I always loved music and art and I wanted to be an artist. And my dad told me I could never make money at that. So he told me I needed to go to school to be an accountant. And so she went to school for accounting, and then that evolved into financial planning. And she said, my goal is to get rich doing this as a financial advisor so I can go and do the thing that I really want to do. And I said to her, well, that's interesting. Number one, talk about two ends of the spectrum, art, accounting. Okay. But I said to her, I said, honestly, just think about this. You want to make a lot of money, right? Yes. I want to make a lot of money. Okay. So you are competing, and I'm a big believer in collaboration, all that stuff. So, but reality is, in the marketplace, in your own company alone, you have 3,500 advisors, many of whom actually love what they're doing. And here you are, you hate what you're doing. And you think clients are going to go with you versus somebody else, and that you're going to make all this money. I would question that. Because if you don't love something, then you don't have a strength in that area, it doesn't matter how, it's like Tiger Woods or whoever, great golfer. I'll use the example of Tiger Woods. It doesn't matter how much I go out and practice my swing. I am never going to be as good as Tiger Woods. Okay. And if I hate the game of golf and I make myself go out there on the range and practice, I'm really not going to be anywhere near as good as somebody who loves the game, who gets up and that's their whole life and they want to do that and they're curious and they want to learn and grow, and their capacity to learn and grow and improve is limitless. So in fact, if you play to your strengths and live in that sweet spot, likelihood, and if of course you can marry that to a vehicle and how you can make money, in all likelihood, you're going to make far more money than you would otherwise.
Speaking of money, that's a perfect segue into the next area I wanted to talk to you about, which is your relationship with money and how you developed that. So let's start with the first question of what is your first memory around money?
Yeah, so the first memory around money for me was my brother was asking for an allowance because his friends had allowance. Mm-hmm. And my parents said, it's your room, right? You want me to pay you to clean your room? That doesn't really make a lot of sense. Are you going to pay me to clean the kitchen or make you dinner? Like, it doesn't really make sense. So my parents did not believe in allowances. And I actually agree with that. They just didn't feel that. They said, look, we're in it together. We're a team. So we all live here. So we take care of it. That's what we do.
Okay. So when you wanted something as a child that required money, how did you get the money?
Yes. So actually at my birthday, I was a saver. Okay. So we should say that up front. So I was a saver and my brother would actually come to me and borrow money off me. And
I can't tell you how many women have said that.
Isn't that funny? Right. So, then they tell women, you know, you shouldn't be managing the money. Really? I digress. So my brother's borrowing money off me. I'm a really great saver. I got money because at Christmas and on my birthday, my grandparents and my aunt from Europe would send me $50 each, right? Right. So I would put it in the bank and I wouldn't spend it. I'd put it in the bank. And so, you know, I was 8, 7, 8, 9 years old and I've got $300, $400 in the account.
Yeah. So pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, I'm 47 now, so it's a lot 40 years ago. So, you know, not bad. Now, the funny thing is, in terms of money mindset, is that my dad used to think it was the funniest thing that I had a little whiteboard in my room and I would keep track of where I loaned it out to, who I'd loaned it out to. So he goes, oh, she'd have up there 25 cents to so-and-so. I'm like, yeah, really wasn't 25 cents. It was a little more than that. Loaned my brother $75 to build a go-kart. 6 months later, I said, hey, yeah, where's that money coming back to me? And so he gave me $100 back. He's like, oh, and he gave me $100. And I thought, well, that's a pretty good deal. I'm talking like that's 25%, nice. Right? Yeah. Or a $25 uplift. So anyway, so the point is that, yeah, my dad used to laugh and make fun of it. And I learned that maybe it was a foolish thing to do. And so so I kind of steered away from it. And I've always been good with money, but I started steering away from it. And many years later, seeing the ups and downs in my parents' finances and the stress, my dad lost everything. He was successful in business. They did very well. And then when I was 11, 12 years old, my dad went to invest in a business venture that went south. And literally to Brazil, it also went south. And he lost everything and more and went bankrupt. And I remember I wrote this thing in school and I saw it only just a few years ago. I came across it, some little story or thing, exercise that you do for school. And I said something like, life is a bowl of cherries, or I don't know, called it something like that. And then I said in there, second page, it says, and I learned that you have to work really, really hard. I was talking about my dad and, you know, having lost this money and starting over. And I said, and I learned I have to work really, really hard and maybe I'll be successful.
Yeah.
And I looked back and I went, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's where it's just, it was so profound. And so many years later, I was talking to my dad and I said, because one of my nieces is, she's an adult now, but when she was little, she would save her money. Like she'd have it socked away and her sisters would want to find it. And one of the sisters would be like, you know, borrowing money from her. Right. Uh-huh. And so I recounted the story of when I was little, cause he was kind of thinking that was cute. And we were laughing. We were all laughing about it. And I said, well, don't make fun of it now. It's cute that she's doing that. And she's got it socked away in the most random places. But the practice of doing it, we want to encourage that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, those were some of my early memories. And I saw my parents, I saw them fight over money. Money became something that, because when my parents lost it all, it was a lot of fighting going on. So I make the correlation to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they had it, life was great. You know, things were good. And my mom was actually much more of a saver. My dad, not at all. He could spend it faster than he could make it sometimes, but it's like, what the, you put money, you just did not put money in his pocket. Cause it like burn a hole through his pocket.
Yeah.
But, he got better later on, but better, let's say that's well, relative.
Yeah.
But my mom was always the one talking about women. You know, my mom was always the one that would have to figure it out. In fact, my dad was a risk taker and he used to have this saying and he would say, you know what, kind of like Richard Branson, right? Screw it. Let's do it. My dad was like, well, let's give it a shot. We'll clean up the mess later. Okay. And that generally meant my mother was going to have
she
to clean
the
up
clean
the
up
the
patrol
mess.
Yes.
In terms of finances.
Yep. Yep. Well, believe it or not, we're out of time here. And there's so many more questions I want to ask, but we'll have to do it a second time. No, I just think it's great. There's good stuff here. So I want to say really thank you so much, Nicole Jensen. And tell everybody how they can get in touch with you if they have any additional questions or if they'd like to use your services.
Sure. So my website is discovertheedge.com. And so for your listeners, I put together a designated page where there's a free download there, the 7 keys to maximizing your potential. And there's a book that I co-authored. There'll be a link to that. And if they want to just schedule some time to talk with me and share where they're at and how we can talk about how I can help them, then go to discovertheedge.com/power-of-the-purse.
Thank you. That is such a gift to do that. I really appreciate it. So to all of you in my Power of the Purse community, I hope today's podcast will give you some freedom around money and even the littlest bit of courage to know more. If so, please visit my website, lynnsevans.com, and look around. And while you're there, sign up for my newsletter and a free guide. Thanks again, Nicole Jensen, for sharing your time and knowledge. And until the next time, thanks for listening. And remember, money is not the enemy. Your ignorance of it is. Goodbye.
This has been Power of the Purse with Lynn S. Evans, Certified Financial Planner. For more information and a free copy of The 7 Myths Our Mothers Taught Us About Money, visit online at womenofsubstanceLLC.com. That's womenofsubstanceLLC.com. Be sure to subscribe for more inspiring stories and information to help you take charge of your financial future. Thanks for listening.